Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, and February fan, Cameron McCoy. How you doing, friend?
Dude, I am living the Viking life right now, okay?
And what could be more February than Vikings, I ask?
I don't know. By the way, congrats on those Kansas City Chiefs, man.
Yes, it was great. I mean, I feel a little spoiled at this stage, you know?
I mean, you do have the smugness of a Patriots fan right now, so...
Oh, you watch your mouth. I mean, certainly there are probably Chiefs fans that are that smug, but, you know, if you were to tell me when I was a little boy, hey, in your lifetime, both the Royals will win the World Series and the Chiefs will win a Super Bowl, I mean, cue walking on sunshine. You know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah.
And to be honest with you, the Chiefs have always been a pretty well-run organization to where, like, if you were to tell me that, I would have believed it. The Royals are the ones that I would have been like, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
Right? They're the Bengals or the Detroit Lions for, like, you know, 30 years. I have to ask you, did you see the press conference with the Detroit Lions coach?
No.
I don't want to ruin anything for you. So when we get off air, we'll play it. I just want to feel your reaction, Cameron.
Okay.
Because it's something special. I don't want to spoil it. Anyway, what I do want to spoil is Kaldheim. We've been playing a ton of it. We're just going to do two mega segments. We're going to do Kaldheim, 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 and then our other segment will be our extra stuff. But my dude, you have become the limited guy in some
yes,
bizarre twist.
Yes.
So you played some limited in this?
Oh my gosh, I've been playing a ton. It's the first time I've put some money into Arena in a long time, actually. So I went and I bought some gems, and that on top of like just the gold that I had to play some draft. I feel like I've had a really good, well-rounded experience with Kaldheim. First and foremost, first impressions, I guess, that I have with Kaldheim is that it's really subverting my expectations. The things that, like, my sealed pools that I think are going to be hot garbage completely were the best things that I played. And then the things that I thought, like, oh, here it is, I got, like, a winning deck, was almost reverse. So it was like this weird game of like what I was expecting to get and what I got out of Kaldheim that made me pleasantly surprised. So things of note, I played the Angels deck, the black-white Angels deck, which I thought was going to be so bad and so slow. It was incredibly good. Like I just had like these, you know, double strike three angels and swinging in for like 20 damage, and it was legit. Removal seems incredibly good. Like I really like the removal spells, the removal lands. Like I mean, there's just so many like really interesting things that work, and I'm curious how Kaldheim's actually gonna work in standard, because it's such a downshift from I think what was happening with the last set, with landfall and all of that, which made it really feel fast. This is a little bit slower, but I feel like it's a little bit more powerful across the board from all color pies that I've played. So initial impressions is that I really, really like Kaldheim Limited. Really like it.
Yeah, I would say even just Frostbite by itself makes the removal a lot better than we've seen in Limited in a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did not touch Limited just because a couple things happened. So this is like my super busy season, but also I missed the pre-order window. I totally missed what day Kaldheim was actually coming out, and I made a mental note to myself like, okay, pre-buy the thing, get your draft tokens this time, Curtis. And then when I got to the computer, I think it was Thursday night, Kaldheim had been out for like a day, and I was like, ugh. So I just threw in $50 and started like one evening. I put together the decks that I was seeing on Twitter. Then, you know, this morning / yesterday, I played some of them, but it's been really piecemeal. And I kind of want to go through everything and kind of the cards of note in standard and what we're seeing. First of all, though, I really like Kaldheim. I think it's a very interesting set, and it's got a lot of personality. It does a pretty effective job of reminding me of Ice Age and Alliances without being cold snap, basically, where it was it just feels like a really shoddy retro tie-in kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the walls of text on the cards help, but also the artwork and just the vibe. And also the snow-covered lands also matter. But I sat down and decided to build a bunch of different decks. The first one I tried was Blue-Red Tempo, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the theme through everything I try. Cameron, when you get four Mythic Wild cards, just make four Goldspan Dragons, okay? It is not even close, from my experiences, the best card in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Busted like Omnath? No. But very easily, I believe, stronger than Stormbreath Dragon and stronger than Thundermaw Hellkite. So we kind of had put it in that kind of range. I think it's beyond those. And the rationale for this is this blue-red tempo deck I thought was bad. Okay, it's a snow deck. You play Frostbite. You play the blue Fortel, Counterspell, and Card Draw. But the problem is all the other decks that exist in Standard generates so much value that if you are able to tempo them once, the next time you aren't going to, right? They're going to play a Saga. They're going to play a Planeswalker. They're going to two for one you somewhere along the line. And Blue-Red just doesn't have the way to overcome that happening once, much less twice, and definitely not thrice, you know? So my takeaway from the Blue-Red Snow deck is it's pretty terrible, okay? But Goldspan Dragon is very, very good. Then I moved on to what I believe to be the best deck in the format, is Green Red Adventures with, you guessed it, four copies of Goldspan Dragon. And basically the only synergy with Goldspan Dragon is there's a, I can't remember the name of the spell, but there's a one green, give your creature a 1/1 counter and hexproof, right? So here's how this works in reality. So the adventure deck plays out like it normally would. If I have an Edgewall Innkeeper and I go off with Lovestruck Beast, that works, right? I also have the Great Hinge. There was no Ember Cleave in the versions that I was seeing and or playing, and I don't think it would work because this is a little bit more of a grind'em than a haste deck. So the like the Landfall Mammoth, stuff like that. But what ends up happening is you ramp into or are just able to play a dragon, right? Goldspan Dragon. They go, okay, target it. And if you happen to have the hexproof thing, you let the trigger resolve, so you get a treasure off that. Then you attack with it. You get another treasure. Goldspan Dragon says when you sack a treasure while it's in play that you get two mana. So I've had multiple times where I'm able to counter it, and then off the treasure tokens play a Great Hinge. You know, like, just like really, really vicious two-for-ones, three-for-ones, or just temp, like, it is an actual just stunner of a card. It ramps you in a significant way. Again, there are many times where I went Goldspan Dragon into next turn Ugin.
Jeez.
You know, and so like the ability, because we always talk about, you know, the mana curve and the ability that Goldspan Dragon has to take you from essentially five to X, whatever else you need after that.
Yeah.
What's the casting cost? Let's make it happen, right? It is huge. It's huge.
So I'm curious with this deck, number of Goldspan Dragons versus something like Questing Beast, is Goldspan just flat out better in this version of the deck, you think?
So I'm playing two Questing Beast. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, because what I'm finding with Questing Beast is it's still good against the control variants, but the other kind of creature decks, there's just a lot of dudes, right? When you're playing against another Lovestruck Beast deck, for example, Questing Beast just leaves a little bit to be desired. Usually it ends up being a four-mana removal spell, right? Or in bad case scenarios, they ignore it. There is a mono-white life gain Angels deck, and to them, Questing Beast is an LOL, right? So whereas Goldspan Dragon, again, it has the utility of just being able to attack and be a value creature, but it also is essentially a Cultivate. You know, and you throw Goldspan Dragons away all the time. You don't care. Because it's like, oh, I need that other treasure to play this and this. Right? And it is actually just amazing how good that card is. So, my recommendation to you, make four of them.
I had one in my limited pool. I was going like a green-white deck, pack three, pick one. I got the dragon. I had to go with it. And in limited, it's so good. It is, you get all the mana.
I was going to say, in limited, it seems like all my dreams come true whenever I have that in play in limited.
Yeah.
Like, even if they have whatever the equivalent of a Heartless Act is, like, I'm still getting a treasure token out of it. Like,
Yeah.
It's so wild. Anyway, and they have to probably do it. Wow. Anyway, I will say, though, with Goldspan Dragon, there were multiple times where it seemed to be bugged out a little bit, and I could have done something with the treasure token in response. Like, not necessarily I had the Hexproof card of my, but I, had a Scavenging Ooze in play or something like that. Mm. And it seemed to just blow right through it. Like, I didn't have a... So I don't know if I just had my settings wrong. Please don't message me and say you need to have on full control the whole time, because that is not happening. No way. I value my time too much. But anyway, so the green-red aggro deck I think is very, very, very good. Then I switched to Reed Duke's Jund list that's kind of floating around on Channel Fireball right now. And basically it's green-red ramp. You play Cultivate, you play Solemn Simulacrum, and then you play Binding the Old Gods. That is just the only black in the deck. That's the one that destroys any permanent, and then you go get a forest card.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part of the saga is all your creatures have Death Touch, which has yet to matter for me, but I know in theory it could. And then there's Waking the Trolls, which is you destroy one of their lands for 6 mana, and then you get a land to come into play, the next one, and then if you get a bunch of big trolls on the third part. So that tends to be kind of the end game, along with, of course, Ugin and Goldspan Dragon. But his version of it didn't have Goldspan Dragon. And I was like, let me just see. I'm going to put Goldspan Dragon in this deck. And lo and behold, it was the best card in the deck. So that's what I did. A couple of the other decks that I ran into that I want to talk about. So the mono red deck seems really bad. Hmm. I've seen it floating around. I've not been very impressed with it. However, the Yorian decks are very strange now. I don't know if you've seen these. There's a bunch of them that are no longer control decks. Like, they're like junk Yorian.
Yep.
Or like five color Yorian or stuff like that, where it's just, you're just trying to make stuff happen. And the lands kind of allow you to do that. A lot of these tend to be green based because you can cultivate and use all these other sagas to get lands out. But then I have played against control. It's been pretty underwhelming. Doomscar seems to be the only thing that's really propping that up. What's been your experience, Cameron? Have you played any standard, or have you been only on limited?
This week I've only played limited. I've seen, quite a few decks. I've been watching a couple different streams and whatnot. I was slightly bummed that the Fortel deck, the blue-white control Fortel deck that I thought it was like, this is going to be it. Just doesn't seem to be good enough in a lot of ways. That turn two where you're foretelling, and then at turn three, if you're foretelling again, it feels like you're not really doing a lot with foretell until turn four, turn five. And by that time, some of these decks are just like, netting you how much value with like Goldspan Dragon, right? Where it's like, okay, yeah, you've got, two foretell cards, in exile. Meanwhile, I have 7 power on the battlefield. So yeah, control's definitely going to need some innovation behind it. I'm really looking forward to seeing like what that will look like. At the end of the day though, it very well could be, it's still going to be the blue-black mill deck. Like, I think that might still be the de facto best control thing you could be doing.
Yeah, Rogues is weird because it's like a control tempo thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It still exists. It's still fine. My experience with it has been it's pretty good against the ramp deck, or at least reasonable. Against the green-red aggro deck, it's, like, not good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have to really hit a large number of drown in the locks and really kind of get me. But other than that, it's kind of a done deal. with how much just like power I'm presenting on the board and what they don't have. You know, I do want to mention, Cameron, do you remember the red counterspell Tybalt's Trickery?
Yes, I saw a huge article on that.
So I haven't seen the article, but I did play against a combo deck where the whole goal was to, on turn two, you play a Tormald's Crypt, and then you counter it with Tybalt's Trickery, and then you put something into play. In this case, it was a Coma, the big snake serpent that makes other 3/3s. Yeah, that guy had that out on turn two.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I'm seeing is like a turn three guaranteed Emrakul. Like, you know, so there you go.
So I'm guessing this would be Modern?
This was this is a legacy thing on one of my Facebook groups.
Yeah, so yeah. In the context of Standard, I definitely don't want to talk about this in terms of non-rotating formats because I don't feel like I have the context. Sounds like you do. It still seemed really bad. Even when he, quote, got me, right? I was like Lotus Cobra in play, and I had to hit another land to Binding the Old Gods of the Serpent, and then I would have been facing down a 3/3. Like, I'm sure there are better turns that maybe they have, or they have better... Like, again, playing a 6/6 on turn two that makes 3/3s every upkeep, that's really good. It's not, like, a lock the way it could be whenever you put into play an Emrakul or something like that.
Yeah.
However, those decks do exist. I did win the match because one time he missed.
Oh, wow.
Like, he didn't hit something. Like, I guess you mill, right? So he milled something off the top or whatever. But that deck is out there. Like I said, the mono white. I've seen Warriors, and that's also seemed really quite bad to me. The Rug Ramp Genesis Ultimatum deck seems A-okay. Along with our friend, you guessed it, Goldspan Dragon. You put him in with Terror of the Peaks, and things get real dumb real fast. So that's kind of my takeaway from Standard. Play Goldspan Dragon in whatever it is that you're doing. I can't imagine not playing red. Like, if I try control, it's almost certainly going to be Jeskai now because I need me some Goldspan Dragon. And because when we had originally spoiled the card, we had talked about, not we had spoiled it, but when we had seen the spoiler, we had talked about it fitting within Jeskai Narset.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, it's just like, where is the card advantage in blue these days?
I think it's in green.
Yeah, or blue green, right? So, yeah. you know, it's a strange situation, but it's kind of where we're at. All right, so Cameron, I don't have any more takeaways from that. Play Goldspan Dragon. Kaldheim seems pretty sick. I'm hoping one day I can play with these cards in paper.
It'd be great.
You know?
It would be great.
All right, we're going to get it out of this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some video games we've been playing. All right, Cameron. So I'm so excited to hear about this game, Kentucky Route Zeroes, because I know very little about it. But it's like on everything. It was in development for like, because it's episodic and it like finished this year, right? But it was like being made for like 7 years.
Yeah. So I bought the first episode, like on Steam in 2013 or 14 or whenever that came out. So I played the first one and then just kind of enjoyed it, forgot about it, and, you know, moved on with life. And then after finishing Disco Elysium, which... was like, you know, like one of the best games of last year. It's creeping in there and like, you know, Cameron's top 10 list of favorite video games. I really thoroughly enjoyed this game. It was just so radically different and, you know, just it was point and click. It was so easy. I really dug it. I was looking for something similar to that. Kentucky Route Zero was the one that kept on popping up as far as being like an engaging story, fun mystery, you know, interesting art style and all of that. So Kentucky Route Zero, straight up point and click mystery game, you know, and you are a truck driver who gets on like these back roads essentially of some Kentucky thing and you get lost. And then it slowly starts to go into like a weird dream-like landscape where you meet somebody, you have a dog, you go through my, I mean, it, you know, it, there, it's not like gamey in the sense of like puzzles or anything like that. It's really just like a point and click adventure story. Each episode is about an hour long. So I find them to be really great as far as like sitting down Saturday morning, I can play an episode, you know, take a break and then come back. And so it's really easy to kind of get through this game, I would say, in like 7 hours if you wanted to. But okay, the story is just really engaging. I really like the art style. It's just like very basic polygons that kind of have like this expressionistic thing going on. Music is great. There's this travel system where it's just like a map of what I assume is like part of Kentucky, and you drive and discover things along the way, and it's good, man. It's just such a simple game, but it's so rich in like the story that it's trying to tell. So once again, I would recommend this. If this is on a Steam sale or the PlayStation 4 or PlayStation, you know, sale or something like that for $10, like I think it's very much worth your time to check out. So give it props. It's good.
So you haven't touched the Switch version, but it seems like that might be a place that I would play it, like on some kind of, you know, vacation or trip. I have kind of gotten the impression, based upon what I know about the story and what I've heard from people, is that it might connect more to you if you're from rural / the South in the U.S., that there's kind of a lot of thematic things about that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it takes place in Kentucky. But I've heard that before, that it's kind of about, like, it's almost like an existential look at that level
of America.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, cool, dude. It's on my list.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what should and shouldn't be on your list, Cameron. Have you ever had one of those moments where you play a really great game and you finish it and then you go to the next game and you're like, yeah, no chance. There's no way I'm playing this.
All the time.
Yeah. So Immortals Fenyx Rising, I wrapped up, new game plused it. I think that game is I would put it to the level of criminally underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great, 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 and a ton of fun. Finished it, hopped into new game plus, and I was like, you know what? For Christmas, I got this copy of Watch Dogs Legion. I'm kind of waiting on Cyberpunk to get patched up some more. Mm-hmm. So why don't I play this other game about hacking? And Cyberpunk has its problems. I'm not trying to run away from that. But it at least has some personality, has some flavor. The problem with Watch Dogs Legion is it just feels so devoid of anything.
Mm.
It feels like a puffy Cheeto. You know? And, I mean, I put in a couple hours or whatever, and it's set in future London, and you are part of a hacker group, and what's supposedly, like, really engaging about this game is you can recruit anybody to your group that's out in the world. So you see an older grandma out on the front step, you can recruit her, and then you can play as her in the game. Okay? Mm-hmm. And while that sounds like it's filled with personality, it just kind of makes everything feel bland and samey. And the hacking mini game is also very bland. Like, everything just feels like what you would assume when you assume the wrong things about Ubisoft games.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Lacking personality, acting like they're trying to say something when in fact saying actual nothing.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And so... That's the real bummer, is that I kind of opted, you know, I got asked by a family member, like, hey, you know, I'm going to pick you up again for Christmas. What do you want? And instead of picking Spider-Man Miles Morales, because this is like October, whatever, I said,
yeah,
just give me Watch Dogs Legion, you know, because I knew it was one that I was thinking about buying, but not sure. I didn't get Yakuza Like a Dragon, which is supposedly awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I did not ask for Spider-Man Miles Morales, which, again, maybe not the most exciting thing in the world, but supposedly pretty solid. And, really disappointed in this one. Really, really disappointed. I never played Watch Dogs 2. I finished the first Watch Dogs, and I can't tell you a single thing about it. Like, not a single thing. So, take the, I mean, if you're a huge fan or if I'm missing something, let me know. But I think it's going to get traded back to the GameStop in the sky, you know, just or actually down the street. I'm just going to go trade it in and pick up something else.
Yeah. So your 100 shares of GameStop stock, how are they doing?
Dude, yeah. I appreciate your desire to make us clickbait enough to actually get some... we'll be like, why do we have triple the listeners on this? Yeah. There's 30,000 listeners on this episode. What is happening? I do want to mention this other thing. So both Control and Neo 2, I have sitting around waiting for upgrades that are supposed to happen this week on the new systems, trying to find what I need to purchase or not purchase to upgrade my copy of Neo 2 has been ridiculous. It's been really strange because now it's like, I guess I have to buy the Ultimate Edition. And so then I have the disc, so I have to put the disc in. Oh, then buy the PS4 Ultimate Edition, which will unlock the PS5. Like, Sony, please sort this stuff out.
Yeah, figure this out, please, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know what I had to do with to upgrade my copy of Watch Dogs Legion on Xbox? Nothing, Cameron. Nothing. Yeah, I just put it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a huge when you have both systems, it is a really noticeable problem, like a really noticeable gap. And I'm sure if you have a PS5 and a PC, you feel the exact same thing. You're like, how is this so hard to sort out? You know. Anyway, so Cameron, if someone would like to get in touch with you and tell you what it's like in actual Kentucky, where could they find you?
That's all on Twitter @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.